Good morning, Vox. It is so wonderful to be with all of you. I'm always so honored to be before you, whether that's in person or virtually. So like many of you, I've been struggling to endure the nonstop inundation of information over the past few months. From COVID to protests, voting to hurricane season, it feels endless. It feels defeating, sometimes daunting. While I've pressed on to create some modicum of a degree of routine, purpose and impact for the past few months, I've been awaiting God to offer me a more tangible approach to this moment. We find ourselves in, wondering what it looks like to pursue both personal peace and community healing and justice. So before I jump into today's text, I wanted to offer a question to help us prepare to explore what our collective purpose looks like in this moment. So I want to offer this question, and you'll see it on the slide shortly. When you hear the term good trouble, what does it mean to you? Feel free to take a few seconds and put your thoughts in the chat. Well, I offered this question today because despite the turmoil and chaos that I spoke about a moment ago, in Psalm 85, I was reminded that while we are always in anticipation of a word from God, he has already spoken to us of his promises, and later on in the text, our purpose. We are already equipped for this moment. In fact, we are already made for this moment. In verses 8 through 10, he reminds us of this saying, "I will listen to what God the Lord says. He promises peace to his people, his faithful servants, but let them not turn to folly. Surely his salvation is near those who fear him, that his glory may dwell in our land." And it resonated with me slightly differently when I read the Message version, which reads, "I can't wait to hear what he'll say. God's about to pronounce his people well, the holy people he loves so much, so they'll never again live like fools. See how close his salvation to us, to those whom he feared. Our country is home base for glory." The state of mind here is that of patient listening, of a willingness to hear God, whatever God should say, of confidence in him that what he would say would be favorable to his people, would be words of mercy and of peace. Whatever God should command, the speaker was willing to yield to it. Whatever God should say, he would believe. Whatever God should enjoin, he would do. Whatever God should ask him to surrender, he would resign. There was no other resource but God, and there was an entire confidence in him that whatever he should say, require, or do would be right. How many of us are like that right now? That there is no other certainty, no other resource, no other blueprint but God. Our routines have changed. Our plans have had to pivot. Our way of life shifted. Some of us are preparing for a new school year, uncertain of how that will look. Some of us have lost jobs, unsure of how will we pay bills. Some of us are living with spouses, partners, friends, unclear how we will survive hearing them on yet another Zoom call. But we are reminded here that God has offered us his peace. He has offered us his presence, and he has offered us his promise. A promise of goodness, of blessedness. We are reminded that God not only loves us through times of trouble, but that we should have confident assurance that he will tend to our welfare. Earlier this year, after much anguish and prayer, I made the decision that it was time to move on from my time serving as director of community engagement at the University of Texas. I'd begun to feel that there was nothing left for me to do through that particular space, that my calling, my purpose needed to be lived out through another arena, another platform. After getting the nerve to have this conversation with my VP and getting their blessing, I'd set out to roll off in April. So being the planner I am, I thought, I'll go to my best friend's wedding in New Orleans, and when I come back, I'll write my resignation letter, and then we'll just begin this process. Well, when I got back from that wedding, the world literally changed. A few days after returning, South by Southwest was canceled. A week later, UT closed for 2 weeks worth of spring break, and the city went on lockdown. As I sat in my living room trying to grapple with this new reality and understand how I would do community engagement, how I would serve Central Texas and meet the needs of housing, education equity, reach our most vulnerable community from my living room, I began to question the decision to leave UT at all. Who leaves their job during a pandemic? Maybe this was bad timing. Maybe this was God's way of saying not now or not ever. So I paused and spent a few weeks meditating, as verse 8 articulates, listening to what God says. For he promises peace to his people. I was waiting for this moment of peace of mind. I was waiting for assurance. I was listening to be reminded of his promise for my life in this moment. And what he offered me was affirmation. Affirmation that my purpose is not confined to one institution, that my contributions there had been impactful, and that I was not forsaking my community by leaving this space. But most importantly, that he would provide, that he would keep his promise to prosper me, despite what the circumstances looked like and felt like. And the reminder of his promise didn't come in the form of an email from a mentor or a quote from an inspirational book. That reminder of his promise came in the form of a text message I received from my maternal grandmother at 6 a.m. in the morning. Now, some of you who follow me on Instagram know her well. I affectionately referred to her as Dr. G Mom on IG, and her text said this: "Virginia, as you go about carrying out your duties, remember it is God who you serve as you do your work. Listen intently through the guidance of the Holy Spirit. Just remember, God uses challenges to make us stronger and ready for even greater things. He will be there to guide you through them. He is guiding you to your next assignment. Trust him. Whatever is next is meant for this moment." And for all of you wondering, that message was followed by a very, very strong emoji game of a heart, praying hands, a bicep curl, a hand clap, a smiley face, and a rainbow. At 82 years of age, I found it very impressive. And beyond my continued marvel at her ability to constantly text me her wisdom right on time, I was affirmed knowing that God's promise of provision and purpose, despite the timing, despite the turmoil, was being fulfilled. So despite what I could see in front of me, I moved forward with the decision to resign, realizing that while COVID-19 was a surprise to me, it was not a surprise to God. And if he had ordained me and moved me in this time, this should not be a disruption. In this photo you see on the screen is a photo of an article I wrote for The Statesman back in May, and what became my going away party via Zoom in July. Both were reminders and indicators of God's promises to me. I wrote that article entitled, "Will You Run? A Message for White Austin," after the murder of Ahmaud Arbery, an article I don't think I would have had the gumption or the goal to write still attached to my title and role at UT. But it anchored me in knowing that my next season would require less boundaries, more boldness, and absolute belief in the power of disruption and conviction. And while I was dreading the idea of saying goodbye to my team of nearly 6 years over Zoom, my team provided me with the most beautiful send-off, surprising me with voices of people that I hadn't heard from in a while, including the precursors, the first Black students to integrate UT, who I wrote about in my book. I spent the whole Zoom call crying as they each imparted wisdom, reassurance to me that my time there had been meaningful and that my time beyond the 40 acres was needed and on time as the world was calling for bold agitation. A Zoom goodbye is not ideal. Virtual community conversations around housing is not ideal. Transitioning from one space to another without a firm picture of what that looks like is not ideal and perhaps unsettling. But what these last few months have revealed is that it doesn't always look like what we envisioned or wanted, but his promises are faithful and true, regardless how they manifest. So I encourage us Vox in this moment to listen for God's promises. And so I want to invite us into a practice this week, and I've written it here on the screen. First, let's create time to meditate on what God has promised you and us as people of God. Remember his covenant of peace, of assurance, of strength, of vision, of calling. And then I invite us to also reflect on how those promises can and are manifesting in this moment, despite uncertainty and despite trouble. As I've been navigating this season, I've also recognized that God's promises are always tethered to our purpose. And while each of us have an individual calling, we're reminded here in Psalm 85 that we also have a collective calling as people, as children of God. In verse 10, it reads, "Love and faithfulness meet together. Righteousness and peace kiss each other. Faithfulness springs forth from the earth, and righteousness looks down from heaven." And just to paint another picture of these words, in the Message Bible, it reads like this: "Love and truth meet in the street. Right living and whole living embrace and kiss. Truth sprouts green from the ground. Right living pours down from the skies. I mean, it's so poetic, and yet it is so instructional. And when I read these words, love and truth meet in the street, these images come to mind. I was flooded with the visuals of us as people meeting in the street to proclaim truth, to honor humanity, to challenge systems, ideologies, and one another in love. From the virtue that Black lives matter, to the proclamation that families belong together and citizenship does not undermine our humanity. These images, these lived realities honored what we read in verse 10, that righteousness and peace kiss each other. And like my grandmother's words did for me some months ago, I sought out the wisdom of our elders to set intention for this moment we find ourselves in. Being reminded that God's promises of peace and provision is tied to our purpose. And in the moment that this moment, that collective purpose, that calling to manifest love and truth was personified by the life and work of John Lewis. As most of us know, he died a few weeks ago after a battle with cancer. A steadfast civil rights activist, a political figure with a conscience, a warrior for justice, but most central to his being, what centered him was his love for God. It anchored everything he did and all that he stood for. He once remarked, "In my estimation, the civil rights movement was a religious phenomenon. When we go out to sit in or go out to march, I felt and I really believe there was a force in front of us and a force behind us. Because sometimes you didn't know what to do. You didn't know what to say. You didn't know how you were going to make it through the day or through the night. But somehow, in some way, you believed, you had faith that it all was going to be all right. It was not enough to come and listen to a great sermon or a message every Sunday morning and be confined to those four walls and those four corners. You had to get out and do something." And if we can go back to the image before, it literally gives me shivers. This is John Lewis on the left, kneeling in the street in prayer. And to me, it is a visceral, visual reminder of how innately connected our faith is to the calling of justice. And as John Lewis remarked, sometimes you don't know what to say, sometimes you don't know what to do. How many of us feel like that right now? How many of us find ourselves unsure of what to say, what to do as we navigate the day's news, as we configure our response and our responsibilities to ensure that Black lives matter, to develop a posture not of non-racism, but anti-racism? It is the faith of John Lewis, it is the faith of us as God's people that should become foundational to those questions and the driving force behind our response to the call, to the purpose to pursue righteousness, love, peace, and justice. Back in February, when life felt a bit more settled, I attended the Anti-Defamation League's annual gala, and one of the award recipients remarked in his speech this: "Fighting for something requires sacrifice. Doing good is just that, good. Donating is good, volunteering is good, but change, justice requires actively fighting hate. It means sacrifice and maybe putting ourselves and those around us in uncomfortable positions. Fighting hate requires action." John Lewis modeled action. He modeled an integrated life where there was no clear demarcation amongst his title of congressman, social justice advocate, community activist, believer, Christ follower. His love for God, his knowledge of God's promises, his belief in God's purpose for his life anchored how he showed up in the world. So let us remember our purpose today, Vox, a purpose that pushes us to show up in this moment, that pushes us to what we expected to what we explored at the beginning of this homily today, to be for purveyors of what John Lewis so often said, good trouble. In a 2008 interview with NPR, he shared a concern about the role, or lack thereof, of the church, saying, "I'm deeply concerned that many people today fail to recognize the movement was built on deep-seated religious convictions. And the movement grew out of a sense of faith, faith in God and faith in one another's human beings. One Sunday, I heard Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. preach on the radio. I was 15 years old in the 10th grade. I heard Dr. King say things like, 'We must not just be concerned about the pearly gates and the streets made out of milk and honey, but have to be concerned about the streets in Montgomery, Alabama.' And I felt like he was talking to me, that he was saying, in effect, that our hands, our feet, our minds must be hands, the feet, and the mind of God." This is directly linked to the call of social and racial justice. This is directly linked to the toxicity and function of white supremacy and hate and injustice. The work of racial justice doesn't just happen without a posture of action, without moving from that of apathy or stagnant allyship to that of coagitation. Righteousness and love cannot meet in the streets without what John Lewis says, our hands, our feet, our minds. He went on to say, sometimes I feel today that maybe, just maybe, the religious community is too quiet. They need to make a little noise. They need to push and to pull and to be prophets on some of the big issues, moral issues. Somehow we need to find a way to reclaim our position as people of faith. He was inspired by Martin Luther King's embracing of a distinctly Christian vision of the beloved community. He said, my life was based on the simple truth of the great teacher, love thy neighbor as thyself. Audre Lorde, a wonderful writer and sociologist who I've come to admire, said it like this, I am not free while any woman is unfree, even when her shackles are very different from my own. And I am not free as long as one person of color remains chained, nor is any one of you. How are we a part of the unfreeing of our community members? In this moment of chaos and uncertainty for us all, but also amongst the visceral injustice and pain for some, how are we dismantling the shackles of those some? John Lewis was listening for God's instruction and promises and answering the call of justice till his last breath. These photos you see on the screen are photos of John Lewis standing on Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C. at the site of the Black Lives Matter street mural, which were taken by my friend Gary Williams, an incredible art director and photographer. I get emotional just thinking about a man knowing he was on the brink of death, getting dressed, getting in his car, grabbing his cane, and like he did decades ago, marching to the street to attest to his and our calling to be witnesses of love, to be bridge builders, to be peacekeepers, to be radical examples of love and justice, purveyors of good trouble. He responded to this moment in an essay he penned for the New York Times just a few weeks before he passed, which he wrote, while my time here has now come to an end, I want you to know that in the last days and hours of my life, you inspired me. You filled me with hope about the next chapter of the great American story where you used your power to make difference in our society. Millions of people motivated simply by human compassion laid down the burdens of division. Around the country and the world, you set aside race, class, age, language, and nationalities to demand respect for human dignity. That is why I had to visit Black Lives Matter Plaza in Washington, though I was admitted to the hospital the following day. I just had to see and feel it for myself that after many years of silent witness, the truth is still marching on. Emmett Till was my George Floyd. He was my Rashard Brooks, my Sandra Bland, my Breonna Taylor. Like so many young people today, I was searching for a way in. And then I heard the voice of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on an old radio. He was talking about the philosophy and discipline of nonviolence. He said, we were all complicit when we tolerate injustice. He said, it's not enough to say it will get better by and by. He said, each of us has a moral obligation to stand up, speak out. When you see something is not right, you must say something. You must do something. It is an act, and each generation must do it. It's part to help build what we call the beloved community, a nation and world at peace with itself. Ordinary people with extraordinary vision to redeem the soul of the world by getting what I call good trouble, necessary trouble. With that image before us of a man committed to his purpose, let us commit ourselves to a practice this month that will allow us to be reminded of our collective calling and how our individual purpose can honor it. So I invite us into a few practices this month, Vox. Motivated by a vision of a man in his last days, marching down to the streets to see justice and peace meet one another. Prayerfully identify what gifts, what resources God has bestowed to you that can show up this week in a meaningful way that pushes us like Psalm 85 offers and John Lewis embodied, so that love and truth can meet one another in the street, in your community. And then I ask you to write down what God is unearthing in this moment for you around your purpose and your calling to bring shalom to your neighborhood, our city, or this country. And Vox, let us contemplate what good trouble means and looks like for us as individuals and as a community. Today is a reminder of the power of God's promises, the power of our collective purpose, and the power of our singular presence in this moment. We as people are profoundly changed by the voice and vision of John Lewis. He was making good trouble until he no longer had breath to do so. Let us pick up the mantle of justice, but also of our faith. Let us innovate on the challenge to injustice. Let us embody righteousness and peace, love and truth. What a beautiful image that John and many others then and now have modeled, knowing that this is not political, this is not just ethical, but it is we are reminded in Psalm, it is biblical. So Vox, as we continue to navigate the emotional exhaustion, the social media trauma, and the visual division in our city, country, and world, I leave you with this reminder in the words of John Lewis. Be hopeful, be optimistic. Never lose that sense of hope and go get into good trouble. Let us go out, serve and co-labor with God in pursuit of peace, love, truth, and righteousness for our beloved community. And as we close our time, I will leave you with some space for us to contemplate what good trouble looks like in Austin. So if it's helpful, I've offered some suggestions on the screen. May God be with us this week, Vox.